Erickson Ropes. Are you ready to go? You waiting for something, or you look? Okay, Senate File 3294.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm here today with John Kerr, who is in the Division of Homeland Security with the Department of Public Safety. And we have a bill relating to disaster relief appropriations that would require local governments or state agencies that receive federal money for disaster relief to reimburse the state for any excess that they've been paid. And let Mr. Kerr speak more specifically to that issue.
First, let's see, Senator, that's all. Senator Pappas moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chairman and members, good morning. Senator Erickson Ropes has indicated.
If you could just identify yourself for the record.
I'm sorry. My name is John Kerr. I'm the Deputy Director of the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Thank you. As Senator Erickson Ropes has indicated, this bill would amend last year's disaster relief legislation, and it would do so by adding essentially identical language in two different places in that legislation. And the sole purpose of the additional language is to allow that disaster relief legislation to be in accord with the FEMA Public Assistance Program. That program is the federal program that provides monies for the repair and restoration of damaged public property. And that really is the sole purpose of the bill. It's, I guess in my mind, it's something of a technical amendment. I'd be happy to respond to any questions you may have.
And Mr. Kerr, this again is to make sure this lines up with what the FEMA regulation?
FEMA Public Assistance Program. There's some language in the disaster relief bill that no doubt fits other federal programs, but it is not compatible really with the FEMA Public Assistance Program.
So without this, then the money would have to be turned back to...
We don't believe, Mr. Chairman, that any monies will have to be turned back. It's simply a matter of, very frankly, going back to last year, as you know, at the time the legislation was enacted, there were a number of FEMA officials in the state. They were aware of the passage of the bill. They read the bill last year, and it appeared to them that as a result of the language in the bill that the state may not indeed qualify for federal assistance. And in our discussions with them, in part to ensure that we would not lose our eligibility for federal assistance, we made a commitment that the following year, this session, we would attempt to amend the bill just to add the additional language.
Okay. I think
it's a little difficult to follow, Mr. Chairman.
I think I now follow it. Other questions, discussion from committee members?
They're hit and miss on our papers.
Any action anybody wishes or doesn't wish?
I'll move the bill.
Okay, Senator Berglund moves that Senate File 3294 be recommended to pass. Further discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you, committee members.
Okay, then we have a couple bills of Senator Lurie, Senate File 3181.
Chairman, I move adoption of the division report.
Senator Berglund moves the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Lurie, Senate File 3181.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is Senate File 3181. It deals with county-based purchasing. It is the result of a good deal of work and a compromise agreement between the plans, DHS, and the county-based purchasing entities. It really is boiled down to doing two things. The first thing is that it rebalances the mediation panel when a dispute arises, such that rather than a designee of the Commissioner of Health and Human Services, a designee of the Commissioner of Health, and county-based purchasing Association of Minnesota Counties designee, resulting in a agency two versus county-based purchasing one scenario. The Department of Health appointee would be removed and replaced with a third person that is agreed upon by the Department of Human Services and the AMC representative. The second thing that it does is addresses the single plan managed care contract. This was the heart of the compromise. It calls for a continuation of the single plan arrangements in place as of March 1st, 2008, and essentially sunsets that in December of 2010. And that is the essence of it. As far as the fiscal note goes in the Finance Committee here, it is fiscally neutral. And I just stand for any questions.
Questions for Senator Lori.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglund.
I'll move the bill for Senator Lori.
Mr. Chairman.
Chair Murphy.
I have an amendment to the bill.
Okay, if we can have it distributed.
You know, this one's easy to.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're on the end, I'm just kidding. I would never do that.
If you want to
put the whole thing
website or something,
wow, that would be the whole thing, of course. Steve, Wendy, and her twin kids.
Mr. Chairman and members.
Chair Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, this is just a small amendment that makes the county-based purchasing health plan in the counties of Winona, Houston, Fillmore, Olmsted, and Maurer counties. It provides them with what's called default status. It has no fiscal impact. And down in our neck of the woods, you know, these county-based purchasing agreements that have been brought together and these plans work really well, and this is going to help them work even better. And there are some folks here that would speak in support of it, so if the committee needs to hear any testimony.
Senator Lori,
If there's testimony, that'd be fine. I'll give a little bit of background. This amendment was offered in the Health and Human Services Budget Committee, and it was not adopted there. It's a hard one for me because I actually do support this policy provision. I made no bones about that. I do have a bill that is the result of a compromise, and this does have a great deal of support, but also some opposition, and so to the extent that puts the work that I've done at risk, I have some reservations. It's a policy that I support. I don't have a vote on this committee. If it goes on, then it goes on. So we'll let you hear from testifiers. Or
Sir Murphy, anything else you wish to offer?
No, Mr. Chairman. If maybe we could get just a couple minutes of testimony on the record, if that's.
There are some people who would like to testify. Senator Murphy indicates that.
It's more than just having a security key.
Yeah. Senator Murphy, I'm not sure I'm seeing anybody other than Senator Lynch. Sir, welcome to the committee. If you could just identify yourself, please.
31.
Chair, committee. My name is Mike Podolka, County Commissioner in Olmsted County, and the Chair of the Steadfast Joint Powers Board of the five counties. Most of you have heard about this issue before. The key points are that this is going to, we have value to offer the state of Minnesota because this is the first urban county that will be in county-based purchasing. We know it works in rural areas. It works well. This would be the state's first ability to find out how well it does in an urban area, and that has value for the state in itself. It's worth doing for that reason. The second reason, we're asking for the default, and the people complain about the issues of fairness to plans, but we're talking about the people in the public system who haven't managed to respond to their choice. They have a choice. They can pick this plan, that plan. They have the choice. They have not done so. And that, in my mind at least, that means that they probably have some impediment to their processing by health, by language, by whatever. And they're more likely to be the kinds of people who already have a case open with the county, people the county are experienced with dealing with, and it makes a certain amount of practical sense for the county to concentrate on those people. They may well be the most expensive people, and we understand that. But it's the most appropriate people for the county. We offer that, and we offer the chance to see the first urban county in our five-county district in county-based purchasing. That's enough for talking. Oh.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Questions for the commissioner? Senator Fredrickson, okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Lurie, is your concern about the amendment that you have a statewide proposal that has no fiscal impact? Is the concern that this is a local option kind of amendment that may or may not?
My understanding of the amendment, it does not affect the fiscal note itself.
Yeah.
What it is that, you know, I had compromise language that really had no opposition, and the same can't be said of this provision. So I, you know, where I agreed to carry a bill and work on getting language passed, it might compromise my efforts in that regard. It might. I'm going to be neutral on this one.
Senator Lynch, is there something you wanted to offer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just add that we've had a lot of discussion about cost containment and within the healthcare reform discussion. And while this is a relatively small amendment in terms of length and numbers of words, it will go an awful long way in helping the county-based purchasing plan in southeastern Minnesota have the capacity and the tools it needs to operate as efficiently and as effectively as possible. And I think that that's a really good thing.
And I'm not sure who can answer either Senator Murphy, Senator Lynch, Commissioner. Mr. Mossman just told me that Mr. Godfrey indicated that there's the need for some kind of federal approval before this were to take place. Is that?
Yes, we've been working with DHS. Karen Peed, I don't see her here. It would have to be approved by the – Karen's always present. It would have to be approved at the federal level.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Karen Peed, Minnesota Department of Human Services. Commissioner Podolsky is correct. This amendment would change how we assign people to health plans if they do not make an affirmative choice. And because it's different from our current process, we would have to have federal approval.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions on the amendment?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Not being real familiar with it, what is your current, what would be the current option for them of a default?
The way the process currently works is that we use what we call a sequential assignment. So if there are three health plans in an area, the first person that signs up on a given day would go to plan A. The second case or person would go to plan B, and the third person would go to plan C, and then the next person would go to plan A. And so it would just go in sequential order. Anyone who does not like the plan to which they are assigned can make a choice of the remaining plans available in that county. So if there were two plans, they could choose the other plan. They would have to notify DHS, though, of that prior to enrollment.
So Mr. Chairman,
Charleston,
have you examined, or how is the plan that would be the default option created by this amendment? How would that be different from the plans that they have by choice?
I believe the way that this would have to work, we haven't worked out the details, but I believe the way that this would have to work is that people would be assigned by default to the county-based purchasing plan, and to get to one of the other plans, they would have to choose to opt out of the county-based purchasing plan. That is because under our current mechanism, we can't tell the difference between people who people are assigned in the way that I described, and we can't tell the difference between people who simply don't bother to make a choice and people who are perfectly happy with the plan they were assigned to and therefore don't need to make another choice.
But Mr. Chairman, I'm interested in how the plan is different. There's suggestion that you can there's a cost savings here. Is the plan any better or worse, or what can you tell me about that in terms of that option that the counties are proposing?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, I can't tell you much about the performance of this plan. They were a successful bidder when we issued the request for proposals for Olmsted County. And I believe that they have a proposal in for our current request for proposals. However, they haven't been in operation, so I have no experience of the plan. They were a successful bidder, so we're confident that they would be able to deliver services effectively. They have no track record to date. Whether there would be efficiencies or not, in general, county-based purchasing plans have been fairly successful. Their administrative costs tend to be somewhat higher than some of the larger plans. That's probably largely due to the fact of their size. So, again, that's all I can tell you about the plan to date.
Mr. Chairman, could the Commissioner
Olson
address that, too?
Yes. We didn't necessarily, Chairman Senators, expect to get the option every year to default. We thought it would be on initial enrollment, and that's acceptable to us. If it depends, there should be an issue of when the break in service is. People in this category go off and on the service with some frequency statistically. And if they've been with another plan a month ago, there's no point to switching them to our plan. But if it's been 2 years since they were at another plan and yet they still neglected to make the choice, then it would be more reasonable they come to us. It's the kind of people that are best suited to the kind of service we give. We have a better and deeper management concept than the traditional health plans do, because the county has these people for life. The health plans, because these people cycle in and out in all business sense, don't have to plan for many, many years ahead. They plan for relatively short periods, and they'll tell you they plan for longer times. But the reality is the people cycle, a lot of them cycle on and off, and those are the people we're looking for, the people who are in stress and have problems and have other problems besides health problems. And it makes sense to put those eggs in the county basket and to do it fairly. The other issue, another reason we're asking for this in talking of fairness, because the plans advertise for their general business, it's really difficult for us as a startup to get enough exposure without spending way too much money to get started. And this is a kickstart, a jump start, if you will, and that's what we're asking for. Thank you.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I think there are some other folks that would like to testify on the other side of this issue. I also would just like to say that we this year are experiencing a number of county-based purchasing plans that are having to have the counties that work with them pay them because they are running in the red. And I think in the future we need to be moving in a direction where if the state is going to give preference to providers for the clients that we serve, it should be based on performance, not on the type of organization that the plan has behind it. In other words, we should be looking for a group of providers that provide the best diabetic care. We should be looking for the group of providers that provides the best cardiac care. And those are the providers that we should be giving the bulk of our business to. So I think that, as they've said, this would have to get federal approval. It's unclear to me whether the administration supports this. Clearly, the negotiations in Senator Lori's bill indicate that they believe we should be phasing out sole source purchasing by the counties, and this is almost the same thing as sole source purchasing.
Yeah. Well, Sarah Berglund has indicated there's somebody else who wishes to testify. Is that correct? I don't. Mr. Griffin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Phil Griffin. I represent UCARE Minnesota. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this issue has been vetted already in committee, and we would suggest that this is not the appropriate place without full testimony to take that on. Be that as it may, I know that when I'm arguing process, I've often lost the argument, and I would suggest to you that members need to look very carefully at this. We have a whole volume of legislation that regulates what happens when somebody takes insurance risk. And you are about to step across the boundaries into the Commerce Committee and into the Health Committee's jurisdictions here without fully looking at all of the impact that the laws you're changing might have. Several, as Senator Berglund has said, several of the county-based purchasing organizations have experienced major losses this year. They differ from our health plans in that they do not have reserves. And if you saw last week's release of the Star Tribune's version of what our reserves look like last year, all of the plans lost money, and it was only through reserve interest income that the plans were able to stay afloat. If these county-based purchasing organizations do not have reserves, and they do not have them required by law, nor are they regulated in the same manner in terms of audits and in terms of consumer protection that insurance companies or HMOs are regulated in, then those problems fall back to the county taxpayer, and the county taxpayer will be the one that is seeing the losses that are very, very significant losses. And Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, while we understand that there needs to be a certain number of people to make one of these county-based purchasing organizations go and to make it viable, we don't think that the way to do that is by mandating people into those programs. The federal government has very clearly set out a requirement of choice so that individuals have the ability to opt into and out of plans so that they can make those choices themselves. We don't mandate under state law or under federal law that people go into one particular plan. And Madam Chair, or excuse me, Mr. Chairman, members, we have some very interesting data. We'd be happy to go into details with you in a hearing. I don't know that you have the time today to go through it, but the disenrollment data is very telling in terms of the number of people that choose whether or not to stay in county-based purchasing plans. And those are very different numbers than those that are in the regular plans. Mr. Chairman and members, I don't know that I can say any more strongly than I already have that we oppose this legislation. We know that it has been heard. It has not passed committee. We are here trying to do it as an amendment that has failed in the House as well, and we would urge you very strongly not to adopt this amendment. Mr. Chairman, members, if there are questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Griffin. Questions for Mr. Griffin? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, the only... you know, they're all losing money, and there was a report in the Star Tribune back on the 21st of a certain HMO had a $6 million bailout. So
Mr. Chairman,
I think some of these arguments were fictitious.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, if I could talk to that specific case in Hennepin County, we have a plan called Metropolitan Health Plan. It also has a special exemption that you've given to that plan that it does not have to have reserves. So once again, this is a plan that is going to be going back to the county taxpayers rather than using the insurance cycle and its ability to move money up and down. We don't think that's a good idea, and it's just, I think, makes the point that we're trying to make here.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy.
Commissioner.
The sincere concern for the taxpayers is most heartwarming. I must point out that the health plan that asked for the counties to put the money back in had just paid out as a dividend, not a dividend, something to go toward preventive care, money is in excess of what they asked for them to send back. So it's like saying, well, we gave you the profit. I'm sorry, we can't give you a profit this year. It was that sort of a situation, not a taxpayer bailout. And Hennepin County has not had, I believe this is their first loss since the 80s when they started the plan, and that's not too bad in that market.
Okay. Further questions or discussion on the amendment? Okay. If not, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Griffin. Senator Murphy moves adoption of the A6 amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, all's in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Senator Laurie, further discussion on Senate File 3181. Does anybody wish to move the bill? Senator Higgins moves that Senate File 3181 as amended be recommended to pass. Is there further discussion? If not, all is in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Laurie, then we've got, from the House files come over, House File 3372.
Companion to Senate File 3245, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. I'd like to take up the House language. This is Administrative Simplification Act modifications. We last year adopted electronic transactions for three high volume transactions in the healthcare industry to attempt to drive some savings in administrative costs. Department, hospitals, insurers have all put in thousands of person hours and a good deal of money and resources into making this happen. It's in general been a very good thing. But as we looked at it, there was a couple of carriers that are unable to participate in some of the transactions, namely the eligibility transaction, and they needed to have a waiver in order, the ability for the Department of Health to issue a waiver such that they don't have to comply with an electronic standard that they are unable to comply with. And it calls for an annual review by the Department of Health such that whenever they become able to comply, they will be brought in line and have to work with the electronic standards. There's also a compliance mechanism that is very cooperative in nature. They're going to work with entities that are having trouble complying with this. We did get a fiscal note that could be applicable to the Finance Committee. It demonstrates that by fiscal year 2011, it might be generating $5,000 a year in special revenues that would be then fed right back into technical assistance to help entities that are having difficulty complying with the electronic transaction standards. So with that, I would stand for any questions.
Questions for Senator Laurie?
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I was just chuckling about in the fiscal note, it says we're making corrections to the Healthcare Administrative Simplification Act of 1994.
Long time.
All the time, yeah. I'll move the bill, Mr. Chair.
All right, Senator Higgins moves that House File 3372 be recommended to pass. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Laurie, you're two for two so far. Senate File 3673.
This is Community Consortium pilot projects for long-term care.
Excuse me, Senator. Senator Pappas moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Laurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have Senate File 3673 before us. Again, it's Community Consortium pilot projects for long-term care services. where across Minnesota, the utilization of long-term care services has drastically changed over the years, whereas we used to rely heavily on nursing homes for a place for our parents and grandparents to age for the last in a respectful environment for the last several years of their lives. That's no longer how we use nursing care. We have appropriately put a good deal of resources towards home and community-based services in an attempt to get a situation where people have the most independence and they're served at the right place at the right time. But we've kind of built silos. We haven't really integrated these types of care, and there are gaps as older adults try to move within the long-term care industry. And this is a measure that I've been working on with the long-term care industry, and essentially there's three pots of money that are currently allocated for long-term care services, and we collectively felt that to take 10% of each of these three pots and direct them towards some pilot projects that can help integrate some of these services and better plan for the whole long-term care needs of an individual, it would be a better use of the money. The three pots that we're talking about are the 10% of the nursing home moratorium exception money set aside, 10% of the nursing facility performance incentive payments, and 10% of the community service grants and community service development grants. As far as I know, there is no opposition to this bill. Speaking to the fiscal note, there was one put together by the Department of Health, one by the Department of Human Services, and one by the Finance Department, and there is no cost, according to any of these entities, in allowing us to move forward and better use some of these long-term care funds to develop pilots and learn how to better provide an integrated care system for older adults needing long-term care services.
Sarah, Lori, let me ask a couple of questions.
Yeah.
Now, this starts the next biennium, is that correct? Is this money appropriate in the 10-11 biennium?
No, I don't believe it starts in the next biennium. Yes, it's 10% of the nursing home moratorium exception for the biennium ending June 30th, 2011.
Okay, and the language indicates that it begins July 1st, 2009, which is the start of the next biennium, and it talks about Commissioner of Health and Division Report shall reserve 10% of any funds appropriated for the biennium ending June 30th, 2011. So there's not a fiscal impact, obviously, in this biennium. There's not a general fund impact in the next biennium. But what happens with the money that is taken from these funds? Now, I'm not conversant with the funds as such, but the fiscal note indicates, for instance, there will be less funding available for community service grants for both fiscal years 2010 and 2011. Assuming the deficit continues, and we're looking at the special revenue accounts possibly to make up for what we'll lose in general fund dollars, how does your proposal impact then for those funds and what those funds are used for in the next biennium?
Mr. Chairman.
Sarah Berglund?
Mr. Chairman, these are not special revenue funds. These are general funds. The reason there's no impact is because all Senator Lori is doing is taking a small amount of whatever is appropriated. So
it's a substitution.
If we're cutting the grants, then it would be a smaller amount going toward this pilot program.
Okay, but it would set up a special revenue fund then for this purpose.
No,
sure it does.
It's not special revenue. It's general fund revenue. It's just an earmarking of three sources of general fund money into a pilot program.
Okay, well, the question remains then. What are we losing in the process?
Well, again, we have these three pots of money that are set up for long-term care industry to help foster it along, and we're losing 10% of those to of each of those sets of pots of money set aside in order to fund something that the industry believes is a better use of funds to help plan for the whole continuum of care. So we lose whatever 10% of those existing pots are. So if we reduce the allotment to these, it would also reduce the allotment that what 10% of each of these pots yields. We're talking about a better way to use whatever money we are allotting.
I think that the problem, Senator Lori, here is that while the money comes from general funds, you're creating a special revenue account with those general funds. And I don't think you really need to do that in order for this to work. And I think you might be better off if you didn't do that.
Well, certainly that's the language of the bill right now, is that a special revenue account is established. But Senator Lori, separate from the question of the accounts, my question is, you're suggesting this would be a better use of these monies. If that's the case, why not direct all the monies? Or are these accounts not being used properly?
They're being used properly. They're good uses of money, but we need to find a way to demonstrate a better way to break down some of the gaps that currently exist in our long-term care system. I mean, again, we've rather rapidly moved away from an old model of using nursing homes and built home and community-based services without enough work at integrating the various silos of care that we've produced, and nobody's looking carefully enough. I mean, there's existing studies, there's gaps analyses done in local communities, and this would be building off of those. We firmly believe that there are better ways to integrate care across the whole spectrum of long-term care services. We don't have all of the answers right now, and that's why we feel that pulling out some of the monies and putting it into a couple of pilot projects to develop locally local-sensitive and locally-driven projects to show us ways that we can better integrate these services would be a wise use of a small part of these. I don't think this idea is ready for 100% of all three of these funds, but it is ready for 10% of each of these funds. To the creation of a special revenue account, there was an A2 amendment. I don't know what you guys have in front of you right now. The A2 amendment that was adopted in the Health and Human Services Budget Division does call for the creation of a special revenue account. This was worked on with the Department of Health. I'm certainly willing to entertain a way to do this that doesn't create a special revenue account if that is a better use, but I would be looking for some advice from members or from the department in terms of exactly how to do that.
Senator Lori, to an extent that might be a bit of a distinction without a difference, but let me just ask about the funds that are specified in your bill.
Senate Council says they can work to prepare a fairly technical amendment that would address this creation of a special revenue account. If that's the committee's,
well, that's
certainly.
I won't speak for the rest of the committee. That's less my concern.
Okay.
I'm trying to look at the dollars. 10% nursing facility performance grants. And how much money is that? Is that it? Mr. Mossman, do you know? What's the 10% of the nursing facility performance grants?
$670,000.
Six.
600. 6.7 million, so is what you're
saying.
If you flip to the next page, Mr. Chairman, the community, it lists them there. The nursing facility is what you're asking about?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
So that's the 6.7?
$6.7 million per year.
Okay, so that'd be about $670,000. Now, would this have any impact, as an example, nursing home COLA, I think for a single year is about $5 million. So would a nursing home be looking, with the nursing homes in the state, be looking to make up the $670,000 from some other source?
No.
Okay. And the community service grants are about $6 million, so that's $600,000 per year, so $1.2 million. What are we going to lose by way of the community service grants?
I'm going to ask Patty Cullen from Care Providers to come up and help, but I don't think anybody's going to be – I mean, we're going to be looking for more money for long-term care services. I can't in good conscience say that we're not going to be doing that, but it's not going to be to supplant these funds.
Yes, it is.
There is a need for greater COLA. I mean, I think – I firmly believe that, but this is a separate issue, and I don't think anybody will be looking for to make up this loss in particular.
Ms. Cullen?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Patty Cullen, representing the Long-Term Care Imperative. One, the example of the Nursing Facility Performance Incentive Grants, those grants are not part of the base budget for any nursing home. It's a competitive process to get one-time money for a specific project. Call lights that are wireless or technology for wound care, those are the kind of projects that are funded under that particular grant. It can't be used for COLA or ongoing appropriations. It's not part of their base budget. And the same thing with Moratorium Exception Process Fund. It's a specific fund that goes toward the construction project for replacement or renovation of nursing facilities. Again, separate from overall operating budgets of nursing facilities. So the use is very different than what Senator Cohen was suggesting for those other pots of money. And I think the other question you asked about whether or not the special revenue account, I mean, we put it there because it's a pooling of funds that are directed by several state agencies, but there's no reason why we couldn't take all those funds, reduce those appropriations, and then reappropriate. So that can also be done to address that other concern.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Loria, I may be way off base, but not working in this particular area. But it seems to me that the continuum of care that has been developing has been come from within the industry itself, that's recognized that there are other options that people would prefer to going to a nursing home that may and you see whether it's total organizations offering the continuum of care or certain segments of one or another, what's the purpose of having to go in, the government having to set this up to go in? Is the ultimate thing that we're going to start regulating all levels of it? I mean, there's been some freedom and some flexibility that's been there to this point, and I hope we wouldn't lose some of those choices and that ability to adapt quickly by trying to create some structure that is a one-size-fits-all and then ends up having to have a whole body of regulation that's going to end up costing everybody more. Is my cynicism warranted or not? Help me.
Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, I don't believe that we're talking about actually enhancing all of the options for long-term care services throughout the entire community by a better communication between the silos of care. I mean, the nursing homes are definitely one component of the long-term care continuum of care. Home and community-based services, it's all about helping the individual better plan for all of their long-term care needs, of which, you know, some part may or may not be nursing home care, but we want people to age in place as much as possible and have the best information available about the entire array of services available in their community and work to fill in some of the gaps. I mean, a lot of times some of the home and community-based care works to keep people out of more restrictive settings to a degree where by the time they enter the nursing home, maybe they should have come a little bit earlier and been better able to have some rehab services and be returned to the less restrictive rather than letting conditions escalate in one silo that only offers a certain type of care. So, I mean, by better communication and identifying where the gaps are and where people are falling through the cracks and maybe not being able to be served in the most appropriate setting at all times, that's what this is about, is making sure that people are educated and that that all of the long-term care service providers in an area are working together to make sure that that all of our resources are properly used. It's not about a new big government bureaucracy.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Lori, it seems to make sense that money come out of the community services grants and community service development grants, because a lot of that, that's what you're trying to accomplish here. Mm-hmm. With the new program. But I'm a little concerned about the nursing home moratorium exception. Do you know how many requests we've had on that, and how have we been able to meet the demands for requests for that pool of money? Have there been many more requests for exceptions and the money that has to come with that than we've been able to fund in the past?
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling. Yes, there have been more requests than there are funds available. However, one of the considerations that we thought of in bringing this proposal forward is that some of the requests that are granted cannot actually be implemented because of the financing of the nursing facilities, because it's just the nursing homes that have to have a certain dollar amount available to match the federal funds. They put the proposal in. They think they're going to get the money from the bank. Their credit rating isn't what it is. What it needs to be to guarantee the loans that are necessary to get the building done. So sometimes the proposals that are granted aren't actually utilized and the money goes back. We're hoping that there are some nursing facility organizations that combine with local counties and communities to do this pilot, to do some construction. And the one example is, you look at the two gap areas most commonly known, is the evening and weekend respite services and transportation. Well, maybe a part of this is to take the construction portion of the moratorium dollars, revamp a portion of a nursing facility into an adult daycare respite service program, and purchase a van so that they can bring the transportation services to a local community. So it's trying to actually untie some of the restrictions in each of these pots of money to address a community need, and part of it could indeed be construction.
Well, certainly, Laurie, now I want to maybe Ms. Cullen. Let me get back to my particular question. And let me just maybe try to pose it in a more concise way. To establish the special revenue account, to be 10% coming from the community service grants and community service development grants. Now, I'm not sure. I mean, there have been a couple of community grants that I've had some interest in that are funded through the Department of Human Services. Do we find next year in the 10-11 budget, when we have a continued deficit, that these particular community grants will not be funded because this 10% of the money is gone for this purpose? That's what I'm trying to figure out. And so that's one question. The second question is, again, who's going to lose money through the community service grants as a consequence of this? Because it seems to me somebody will.
Senator Cohen, it's true that there will be less funding available through the RFP process for community service development grants. I don't view as someone losing. I think another community will get the funds through pilot project.
But if I'm the grantee and I don't get the money, I've lost the money. I think they're not going to view it that way.
It doesn't take away from people who are current grantees. We've set this into the future, so it's not current recipients of any of the grants that would have money taken. It's the future RFP. That's
future,
why we did
future
it
like
future.
A year from now. It's the next biennium, as I look at the language. It's not a question. I recognize it's not right now, but next year when we're putting together a budget with another billion, $2 billion in deficit, and we're looking to cut wherever and we accentuate a cut to community grants. It sounds like I'm right in that regard. The question is this a better use of the money than the community grants? And I don't know, because I haven't gotten an answer as to who's going to lose their community grant. because that person's not going to view it as or that organization's not going to view it as a win. They'll view it as a loss for themselves.
Mr. Chair, you know, it would be hard to identify who the person, who the entity that didn't get that grant would be, as it isn't awarded yet. I mean, we're talking about another community service grant, essentially. I mean, so we're talking about creating these demonstration projects that are very needed community service efforts, and so it's the funding of a community service grant, really. I mean, to work on this particular area out of a portion of the broader community service grant.
To the exclusion of some other area.
Well, every arguably. Grant that's given is to the exclusion of the next in line. I mean, we're talking about prioritizing this grant. It's going to go to a community service entity that's building exactly the same type of exactly the same type of model that the community service grants are designed to accomplish.
Is there a reason why, and I think I know the answer to my question, is there a reason why this couldn't be done next year in the regular budget process out of general fund dollars? And the reason is because that won't be possible next year.
I mean, I think that it's 10% of whatever is allocated for that purpose. So, I mean, it's not a general fund. It's not a new general fund expenditure. So, I mean, to the extent that it could be done this year, next year, I mean, it's 10% of whatever we're able to come up with.
No, that's correct, Senator Laurie. But what it's doing is appropriating money for the next biennium, setting up a special revenue account. So now we have that special revenue account established. It's going to be that much more difficult next year to say, well, this is a new program in this new special revenue account. We have a deficit. Let's use that money. Because the argument back is going to be, oh, no, we got the special revenue account. I mean, that's just the reality of the budget process. And so the money at that point will be earmarked and will have its own ready-made constituency for not taking that money and send it back to the general fund. So it clearly is an effort, however well-intentioned, to wall off money that's currently general fund dollars and utilize it for a purpose next year, making that much less money available for the deficit or for other directions we might want or feel we have to make next year. Now, it's not to suggest that what's proposed is not of benefit, and you've made that explanation. I'm talking about the budget process, and I think Senator Foley might want to take some of the maybe the civil filing fees, and those were increased for the court budget, but at this point they go into the general fund. So I think Senator Foley might want to take the civil filing fees, set up a special revenue account. They're not a special revenue account, and make sure that they are plowed back into a particular program in the district courts, because he knows he's going to face a deficit next year in his budget. So, I mean, that's the budget process.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think this bill ties the hands of budget cutting for the purposes of balancing the budget. If 50% of these accounts are reduced, then this program would have 50% less money than they thought they were going to have to do these special demonstration programs. I think the reason that they are coming to us this year is to make sure that they are not taking money away from anybody that's received a grant, so that every biennium there is a certain amount of these funds that go out to existing grantees, and then there's a certain amount that goes out to new grantees, because the old grantees, if they've received the grants for a long enough period of time, are phased out from being able to continue to get the demonstration money. So by doing this ahead of time, then the department would know when they're putting out an RFP how much money to advertise for these existing programs. And it wouldn't, therefore, be taking anything away from anybody that would be renewing a grant. It would only be limiting how many new grants could be funded through the source of funding.
Well, Senator Berglund, that's Mr. a Chair. Distinction without a difference, because certainly if to suggest that this will only take money away from new grantees, next year how much money will there be for new grantees? I mean, we're going to be trying to save every dollar we have. Senator Laurie.
Mr. Chair, I think Senator Berglund makes a good point. The other reason that I would add for doing it this year is to allow communities that want to participate in this and that recognize that there are significant gaps in the long-term care continuum of care can get to work and start thinking about this and be ready to submit applications for this funding right then. And, you know, as far as the special revenue account, you know, Senate Council tells me that there isn't I'm game to change it from special revenue if you feel that allows us more flexibility in the next year. I'm not trying to tie the legislature's hands in terms of being able to do the budget balancing that we need to do. I'm trying to say that there are monies that go out right now, and these are good criteria to add to help make sure that this use for these funds is not neglected and that we continue to strive to find better ways to serve older adults entering into and requiring long-term care services.
Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. Chairman, this question may be a distinction without a difference also, but and I'm not even sure it makes any sense, but to Senator Cohen's point about people who might be losing potential grant monies as a result of this program, is there a way that they could qualify for the new monies?
Absolutely. Their communities can get together. That's what I say. I mean, this is about a community effort. It's, you know, we're going to encourage people to be working in this field. I mean, and looking at long-term care services, any community that is seeking funds can get together and seek these funds by the same token.
Mr. Chairman, would they have to be used in a different manner than they were used before?
Well, they'd have to be used towards, you know, the goals of the community consortium demonstration projects to help make sure that the long-term care needs of the people are met in a better manner, and that breaks down some of the barriers between existing silos of care and the current long-term.
Mr. Chairman?
Sarah Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we do this all the time. As needs change and you have pots of money, you do change criteria in order to direct and to move forward in it. And I think that's all that this is. It's just putting that notice out in advance. You know, some of these may be applying for something that's in the existing criteria, but this is saying this is an area of need and we would like to get ahead of it rather than behind it, and it's within the same realm of service, but just taking a different approach. So I don't understand your concern.
Well, Senator Olson, you're correct. We do it all the time. We usually don't do it when we have a $2 billion deficit. I mean, this sets up a new program. Senator Olson, let me finish. In response to Senator Tomasoni, for older adult services community consortiums, that's a new program. And, yes, we do this kind of redirecting of finances all the time. That's what this committee and this legislature is all about, and you're absolutely correct. We normally don't set up a lot of new programs during a time of deficit. That's what we normally don't do. And certainly this program and certainly one that Senator Laurie suggests that might be of great benefit will certainly, in the context of a deficit, take away from something else. That's inevitable. This is not 2001 or 1999.
Mr. Chairman, as Senator Berglund said, this doesn't stop us from taking away. And if you take away from the pot, there's a percentage of it that would be going. There's going to be less coming out of this one, too. It's just a way of framing the criteria and direction for this type of grant within that particular pot of money, and it doesn't stop us from changing that.
Okay. Well, then I would strongly suggest that, that being the case, if we follow Senator Olson's admonition, that we should make sure that the money is not walled away. And possibly, we should, Senator Lori, you've indicated you would not object to changing how the funding would take place. So Mr. Mossman has some language. Let me ask you what you think of this.
Mr. Chairman and members, the issue with regard to the disposition of where the funds would be located, if you look at your division report, there's a paragraph D in the division report, which is where the special revenue fund is, the amounts are deposited in the special revenue fund. If you would be retaining some language from there, but if you essentially struck that paragraph and replaced it with language that said the amounts reduced under paragraphs B and C are appropriated from the general fund to the Commissioner of Human Services to fund community consortiums, and then retain the last sentence, if it's your preference, community consortium funds shall carry forward until expended. That would leave the money in the general fund. Mr. Chair, members, the one thing I would add, just in light of the conversations that you're having with regard to the fiscal note, the amounts that are shown for fiscal 10 and 11 that would be transferred in are essentially assumptions of base appropriations for 10 and 11. Because we don't appropriate for 10 and 11, you don't exactly know what those base numbers are yet. And we'll know what those base numbers are, but you won't know what there is actually appropriated until you're done setting the biennial budget. So under the language of the bill, it'll be 10% of whatever you appropriate next year for these programs under this language would essentially then be an additional 10% change in those appropriations that would be moved into this here program.
Senator Lori?
Mr. Chair, I have no problem with that amendment.
All right. We move adoption of the amendment.
Okay. Further discussion on the amendment as moved by Senator Berglund. If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Further discussion on Senate File 3673.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is something that I am interested in doing because in the long term it could end up saving us money. But I just keep thinking of all the needs in some of these older nursing homes or nursing homes that are trying to meet certain standards, and get their ratings up, that they may have been embarrassed by things that as they get rated, which the performance grants are probably designed to help them address some of those issues. Next year if we come back and reduce these funds even, then these two numbers, 1 and 3, the nursing home moratorium exceptions and the nursing facilities performance grants, could be further reduced besides the 10% we're taking right now. And I just don't know that there's enough funds in there at all as it is. And Senator Berglund probably has a better understanding of this than I do of how many requests these funds receive currently that are unmet. And I know they did indicate that the nursing home moratorium fund did receive a lot more requests than they had money for it. How about the nursing facilities performance grants?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Berglund
and Senator Roebling, the nursing facility incentive grants are not a grant program that people apply for. Ms. Cullen, do you want to help me?
Ms. Cullen?
Certainly, Senator Roebling, Senator Berglund. Unlike the pay for performance, which is the add-on that goes to all facilities based on the ranking, the performance incentive grants is a separate program where it is an RFP competitive process. This will be the first year there was only a small amount of money available, and actually they kind of struggled since it was a new program to even fulfill all the requests. This next time, this round that's underway right now, I do believe they've figured out a way to spend all the money. But these, again, are time-limited kind of pilot projects almost for each of these grants. They're testing out wireless call systems. They're testing out how to do a certain wound care program. So it's not at all tied to their performance, although one of the criteria in the performance incentive grants, you can't be a facility in trouble in order to get a performance incentive grant because they don't want to put more money on something where the core quality issues need to be addressed first, if that answers that question.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lori.
Senator Roebling, I think also there might have been a little bit of a misunderstanding of the money set aside for the moratorium exception process. It's not so much that there's more people able to – that there's more applications than the money will fund. It's that the applications come in, but they don't have the financial backing within their realm to actually utilize the fund. So I do think there's it's not the case that we're not able to fund what we need to through the moratorium exception process.
Further questions? Okay. Thank you, Senator Lori.
Thank you.
Anybody wish to take any action on the bill?
Did we vote on the amendment?
We did.
I'll move the bill then as amended.
Okay. Senator Berlin moves that Senate File 3673 as amended be recommended to pass. If there's no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Leo.
Okay. Senate File 3122, Senator Dahl. And
I'll move the division
Senator,
report.
Yeah. Senator Berlin moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Dahl.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. The bill we have here before us is in regards to oral health care in the state and trying to advance our reach into the underserved parts of the state. I have two components to this particular language. One is actually an amendment was put on in the last hearing we had with this. It came from Senator Lynch on foreign-trained dentists to provide a avenue for which they can have a little more supervision for 3 years and also work in underserved areas for a period of 3 years before they actually get unlimited license through Minnesota. It's a little more restrictive language than what was originally we originally had, and I think it provides again more access to lower income and underserved areas of the state for oral health care. And then the second provision in this language is a study to be held through the Commissioner of Human Services to look at new ways of unifying or providing coverage to public program enrollees in an attempt to improve access to dental care, to provide some cost savings to providers in the department and improve quality and outcomes of care. There's right now there's a lack of participation, it seems, with dentists, and also because of the number of programs that are out there, what we find is that a lot of times there's a mismatch where the dentists are enrolled in one program, but the enrollees of a particular program don't have access to those particular dentists in their area. So asking the Commissioner of Human Services to conduct a study to see if there's a better way of doing that across the state.
And Senator Dahl, is this program, the Forgiveness Program, is this run through the Department of Health currently?
Right. Well, and there's part of this bill is it's been kind of separated out. What we have left here is not the forgiveness, the loan forgiveness part of it. This is simply language on the study, the dental coverage study, and the amended portion on foreign-trained dentists in our state and the provisions.
Oh, I see, in the division report.
Right.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Berlin.
We took out all of the money provisions, so what's left in here is a provision that would allow credentialing of foreign-trained dentists and a provision within appropriations available for the department to study whether they should carve out the dental contracts and issue one dental contract rather than having dental contracts be part of the managed care contracts.
Okay, and I see that now by reading the division report. For the Senator Betzel.
Just,
just a question. I guess, Mr. Chair, and this is probably more towards Senator Berglund. The report is going to be due on December 15th, 2008. Is this something that you would need in anticipation of the 09 session, or is it something that, you know, can probably wait until the session actually starts? I mean, we don't – I usually try to not have reports submitted early if they're going to wind up sitting around until the session actually starts. Sometimes there's an actual reason for it. I don't know if in this particular case – why it would be December 15, 2008 as opposed to January 15, 2009.
Senator Berglund. Senator Berglund, you've often put that in the context of the holiday.
Well, it's going to be submitted to the chairs of the committee have jurisdiction over human services policy and finance. So I'm sure
I think it was just the date that was picked by Senator Dahl and his group.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dahl, especially – the House is going to go through an election. We don't know necessarily who's going to be the chairs of respective committees. It might be a while. So I would suggest that on the committee report on page 2, line 6, change December 1508 to January
1509. Mr. Chair, I think that's a good amendment.
Senator Bessel moves that amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Further discussion on Senate File 3122. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question because I don't know how much money dentists make. But in the awarding of the scholarships, it says that scholarships awarded under the program must be at least $30,000 each year for up to 3 years of service at a nonprofit organization, community clinic, or federally qualified community health center. How do people working at those kinds of facilities get paid? And is that how you establish the $30,000 differences between what they would get paid if they went to a regular clinic that wasn't nonprofit? Or how did you come up with that $30,000 amount?
Mr. Chairman, this is a question about something that's not in the bill.
Right. Yes, Sir Roland, you're looking at the bill as opposed to the division report. Further questions on Senate File 3122?
I'll move the bill for Senator Dahl.
Senator Berglund,
amended.
Senator Berglund moves that Senate File 3122 is amended to be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed. Motion carries. And then we have thank you, Senator Dahl.
Thank you.
And then we have Senate File 3056, Senator Fredrickson. Senator Anderson moves adoption of the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, I've asked Mr. Bob Meyer from the Department of Natural Resources to join me here to answer questions. Senate File 3056 would allow the Department of Natural Resources to retain monies from the sale of administrative sites to be reinvested back into administrative sites. This would give them an incentive to do some consolidation and efficiencies, and it would also allow them to consolidate some work sites in a more expeditious manner. They have 182 different sites around the state. And going to the bill, I would suggest the easiest way to understand what this bill does is to look at the second section first on page 2, where it establishes a facilities management account to be used to acquire facilities or renovate existing buildings for administrative use or to acquire land for design and construction of administrative buildings for the Department of Natural Resources. Then you can see back on page 1, section 1, that would direct the money from the sale of Department of Natural Resources property to that account to be used for consolidation and building new sites.
And maybe my question, Senator, is directed toward Mr. Meyer. How would this impact, say, a repair and betterment request from DNR for the biennial bonding bill?
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. It will work hand-in-hand with that right now. I do have a handout here that if we could get out to the committee members. Currently, when we sell land, it goes to the land acquisition account. So if we sell a site, Those monies go into the land acquisition account to be used for Outdoor Recreation Act acquisitions. It doesn't allow us the opportunity to improve our sites or to do co-located facilities with local units of governments or things like that. The smaller sites, the repairs that we do, this will provide us a funding mechanism for that. But we will also still be working in conjunction with the Department of Administration and the legislature as we look forward and do our asset renovation and the larger office sites that we have. The back of the handout actually shows the two positions that we have. Current practices, lands and properties that are for sale go to the land acquisition account to be used only for units of the Outdoor Recreation Act, parks, scientific and natural areas, wildlife management areas. What we're asking is as we sell an administrative site to have those revenues go into this account so we can work more effectively and efficiently at making sure we are next to the natural resources base where we work so closely and operating in the most efficient and effective manner. So, Mr. Chair, it's kind of a long answer to your question. It will work jointly with that process.
And certainly I understand that where you have land sales, that money's been directed within the DNR, whereas the DNR sale, and you're looking for arguably greater flexibility in the usage of that money. So I just mentioned that because that's a distinction from the discussion I led relative to Senator Lori's bill, where it was money arguably being used from something exterior to the purpose of his new program. So I recognize that. So I was just curious as you're not assuming this is going to supplant arguably a bonding request, but it would be of supplement to a bonding request.
Mr. Chair, members, correct.
Further question?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking at the back page of this handout. I'm still trying to figure out why wouldn't it be better to use that money to buy and help outdoor recreation systems rather than buy or build an office facility, or else I'm not reading right.
Equity out. Build a nicer building with it.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, Senator Vickerman, what we're trying to do here is to give us the opportunity to manage our office locations. Right now, there is no incentive for us to sell office sites, to consolidate, to relocate our offices or work in a more effective manner. So what we're trying to do is, as we're all faced with decreasing funds, manage those revenues to make sure that we're located where we can be, where we should be, and in buildings that are energy efficient, cost less money to operate and maintain and are co-located. I understand your concern, Senator Vickerman. Right now, we are not selling office sites because we don't have the tools to relocate. We don't have the funds available to us. This would allow us that manner. And I think the sites that we're selling, they are not natural resource locations. They're administrative sites, buildings, storage, garages, things of that nature where we need to do other things. As we look forward to working with bonding acquisitions, trust fund dollars that we get for the land acquisitions, this gives us another tool to help us with our administrative sites.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Mr. Chair, representing rural Minnesota, are you going to – I guess my concern is I want to be sure that rural Minnesota gets their fair share and not go up to the metro. And I have nothing against the metro, but I want to be sure. So I'm trying to read if that's – is that what we're doing here?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vickerman, these facilities would stay in the area they serve now. And most of these facilities are in rural Minnesota, and where they consolidate, they'll be in rural Minnesota. It wouldn't make sense for them to put an office here in the metropolitan area for serving Lake Chetek or Murray County or Lyon County or Lincoln County.
We should change that.
Mr. Chairman,
to that point, Senator Frederickson, you could make the point that all the DNR's offices should be in rural Minnesota, and none of them should be in here, but most of them are here in the Twin Cities.
Just don't carry it too far.
I know.
I just want to make
the point.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, the division report has a provision dealing with environmental learning centers, and I did want to talk just a minute or two about that, if you would allow me. This Division report refers to environmental learning centers. And members, we have eight residential environmental learning centers around the state in the various ecoregions of the state. And they are some of the finest environmental learning centers in the United States. And they're Wolf Ridge, Long Lake, Deep Portage, Laurentian, Eagles Bluff, Audubon of the North Woods, Prairie Wetlands, and Prairie Woods. They're residential, so they have sleeping facilities at these environmental learning centers, and they were built for elementary and secondary students. So there's a space allotted for those age of students. Now, when adults are in their bunk beds, they're typically bunk beds. When adults use the environmental learning centers, adults aren't very enthusiastic. In fact, they will not climb into the top bunk of a bunk bed. So the space problem is no problem. But they also do some programming for college-age students, and the college-age students are adults. So they need more space in these dorm-like rooms, but because of the code of the health department, they cannot be used that way. So simply what the amendment does that's in the division report is allows the commissioner of health to make exceptions where the commissioner can do that in safety.
Okay. Further questions, Senator Pariso?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Fredrickson or Mr. Meyer, either one, under Section 2, it's interesting that you're splitting the proceeds in Section 2, except as provided in Paragraph B. The remainder of the proceeds from the sale of lands that were under control of the department would be credited to the land acquisition account. And then you have the remainder of proceeds, Paragraph in B again, which can be credited to facilities management account and used to acquire facilities and or land. Is one repetitive of the other, or is it unnecessary of the two sections? Excuse me, Section 2, Sub 3, and Paragraph A and B. Sounds like conflicting division of the proceeds to me, but I don't know if I understand it correctly.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Pariso,
because
I think that
in the part,
some of the proceeds of the sale first go to facilitate the sale.
Proceeds go to pay the cost of sale.
But it's land sale versus facility sale or purchase or anything.
The costs are taken off of the sale first, and then after the costs are paid, the remainder would go into this facilities management account.
So then what would go into the account for land acquisition in Paragraph A?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pariso, the land acquisition account, any land that we sell currently, if we sell any types of lands that come through the land sales piece, land sales bill, or units of the Outdoor Recreation Act that are existing that we would sell, would go into the land acquisition account. We're looking at a parcel right now in the Rochester area. That is a wildlife management area. The city of Rochester wishes to purchase because of encroachment, and we would take those proceeds to buy another area in the region that we're working with the city on and the area on at the same time. So those dollars would go into the account to be used for similar type of expenditures.
Thank you.
Senator
Chairman, I'd move that Senate File 3056 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
Well, I'm not sure we made any amendments, but
Division report.
Division report. That's right. All right, we have Senator Fredrickson's motion in front of us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator. And members, we'll meet tomorrow at, is it 8 o'clock?